Welcome to The Wise Fool. I'm Matthew Doles, your host. Today my guest is Piotr Sikora, a curator for artist residencies at Meat Factory in Prague, Czech Republic. In our discussions, we touch on social media, artist residencies, artist statements, CVs, bike polo, and support networks. Pronounce your name correctly for me.
My name is Piotr Sikora. As far as Sikora, I would say kind of easy to pronounce. My first name, Piotr, it's a tongue breaker. And yeah, I do get a lot Piotrs and Peters and different variations of my name.
Yeah, I would have called you Peter. Piotr. But it would have ended up probably in a fast conversation to be Peter.
Yeah, and I don't mind. It's just... just the name after all.
Okay. And where are you from? Where were you born and raised?
I was born and raised in Poland, in Krakow. I lived there for till I got like 24, and then I started to move around. I was living in Warsaw for a bit. I did my Erasmus in Milan, so I do have some Italian experience in my curriculum. And then I moved to Prague 5 years ago. What brought me here?
Great question.
That's one Czech curator who's now my wife, Karina. And
oh, that's interesting. So two curators in one household.
Yes.
How does that work? Like, I dated other artists and that did not go well.
Uh-huh. I really do believe that it's a question of your personality rather than your occupation. I mean, with us, we made this decision that we won't work together, not at all, because now we're actually developing one project together, but we just try to avoid the situation when you at home together and you work together and there's like too much of possibilities to interfere with each other and not find a common language. So we just try not to work that much together, and it works pretty fine. I mean, yeah, it's nice, you know, all the gossips, all the art world gossips, you just exchange it on a daily basis, and somehow, yeah, I like it.
Gossip in the art world.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of something like that? The phenomenon, like gossiping artists?
No. To me, the art world is very stoic. They don't talk about each other behind their backs.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, all right. So you got married and then you came here, and you're now currently working at Meat Factory, which is this really, really cool old, well, it's spelled M-E-E-T as in meet up, kind of like a group meeting. But it is actually an old meat factory, if I understand it correctly.
Actually, no, it's a glass factory. And I think in 1950s something, yeah, they were producing bulbs, like light bulbs for... And they do have some connotation with České dráhy, with the railway, a company, the National Railways. The first meat factory, the place where David Czerny, David Koller, and one more member of their team met and decided to set up something like that, meaning an organization, an NGO that would try to, you know, create some sort of platform for art to merge, to meet together, not only visual arts, but also performance and theater and music. And they the first place they occupied was a former meat factory in Holoszowice. And then it started in 2001, 2002, and then there was a big flood. And in 2007, they decided we got to find a new space. And actually, no, in 2007, they already knew that this is going to be a new location, the former Inwald factory in Smichów.
Okay, well, now that at least the name makes a little bit more sense, because originally it was in a meat factory.
Yes.
Now it's in a glass factory. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Okay, and your role is primarily as a curator of their residency program. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is what I do.
And is this your full-time job, or do you still do outside curatorial work?
Well, I'm also a young father, so from the moment when I got a kid, got myself a
How old?
Bojovoy. He's 2 years old now. So it's pretty much the same time I work here. I work here for 2 years and a couple of months. And I have to say, like, I try to limit my professional activities after that, just to have more time for my family. So this is like the first and most important thing what I do, working in residencies, which is fairly interesting and really easygoing sort of position. And I gotta say, but it also costs you a lot of, like, you have to be super hospitable and you really have to genuinely take care of these people, no matter whether you're supposed to come to the place and to fix something or just be around with some curatorial advices or just like show them the city and get drunk at some point and get to know each other better. So
sort of like an arts Airbnb.
Kind of, yeah, we can put it like that. And so actually it's not only me, it's a whole team of people. Three of us, both me and Lucia Kwaczakowa, my colleague, we're responsible for the programming. So we're responsible for whom we're gonna invite for residency, what kind of partnership we'd like to establish with whom. Maybe I can elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, please do. Actually, I mean, the reason why I'm so interested to talk with you is because I know you're very active in the curatorial realm of the region, but also the specifically the residency, because it's very, you know, there aren't a lot of residencies really around this region, at least. And so to be able to have a conversation with somebody who sort of curates and runs a residency, to be able to offer that to the listeners, to some sort of insight mm-hmm. on how that kind of thing runs, no matter where they live, is a very nice resource. So that's what mm-hmm. I'm hoping to learn mostly about the runnings of a residency mm-hmm. And the application process and the curatorial process itself, things along that line. So yes, please elaborate.
Okay. Well, maybe I will start with just describing the rest of the team and what are our tasks and what we do on a daily basis. So as I mentioned, we are two curators working in the residencies here in Meat Factory. And also maybe just to have a bigger image, like a better perspective on what amount of people we're dealing with. Throughout the year, we have around 30 up to 40 artists at the residencies. What we offer, we have a lot of space that we can offer as a working space, as studios. So this is like the first and most important thing. And it also somehow got us back to the moment when they set up Meat Factory, when they, with David Czerny, who's an artist, visual artist, he just wanted to offer to artists from here, but also international artists, space where they can first work on their pieces and then exhibit them. So we have, at once we have up to 8 artists. We give them accommodation, we give them per diems, so we support them financially, and studios. Both me and Lucia were responsible for making decision whom to invite, what kind of partnership we'd like to develop with what countries. And this is also
wait, slow down. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to that. So first of all, you don't have open calls, but you invite people.
Yeah.
Because that's a huge difference in types of residency.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I've seen some open calls. You do like once a year or twice a year do an mm-hmm. open call, but generally you do invitation.
Yeah. Well, it really depends. When it comes to inviting artists from abroad, we're by invitation only. We do not have any open calls. And it was actually already when we came to work here, 2.5 years ago, it was done like that. The previous curator, she decided, listen, we do not have a capacity to go through 500 portfolios and figure out who would be the 10 residents we'd like to invite for the residency. And it also doesn't really make sense to do it like that. Maybe you're kind of lost and just humongous numbers of people, and it gets absurd. So what we do have several open calls, but mainly for Czech artists going abroad.
Czech artists going abroad. So you will sort of sponsor Czech artists through your residency program going to other residency programs throughout the world.
And we have this sort of mutual exchange, because this is also how it works. Like, we are sending Czech artists to, say, Strasbourg, to SAC in Strasbourg. And we received one French artist who would stay with us for 3 months. We have this type of partnership with, as I mentioned, Strasbourg. We had the same with Artport in Tel Aviv, which is privately funded foundation working with contemporary art, with the exhibition space and also studios. And we do have the same with Air Antwerpen. So every year we just launch an open call to figure out who would like to go there and who would like to just represent, so to say, Czech Republic abroad. So there were three main cooperation partnerships, and we have another one with a place here. And just so we know, it's not like now we're getting to the point where we're sending abroad artists who are based in Czech Republic, but they're not Czechs.
Me, the same, I could do that.
Yeah, you could do that.
I could. And, if I had good enough work and a good enough proposal.
And we do have also this cooperation with one collective called Bubahof, where they set a connection between city of Caen in Normandy, if I'm not mistaken, and North France. And we receive one artist who's coming after his, her graduation, after diploma, to stay with us for like three months.
So we have generally, this type of, generally your residencies are 3 months in length?
Yeah, I would say so. Most of them, they are 3 months. Sometimes we have curators and theoreticians who are coming for 1 month. And yeah, there are also 2 months solution, but we're not biggest fan of that because it really does make sense to stay here for 3 months.
You get more of the cultural experience. You get more of the influence on your work kind of thing if you're around for a little bit longer, mm-hmm. and get a little bit more of it, of course.
That's for sure.
Going back to the invitation part, so you invite artists. How do you find artists to invite?
Mm-hmm. Well, so yeah, we have part of our program. Those are the partnerships I mentioned. So the people coming through these open calls, launch within like partners institution in Strasbourg or in Tel Aviv. And then we do have around 10 artists were invited by us. And then it depends.
But that's the question. The invited by us.
Yeah.
How do you find your invited by us artists? Mm. I mean, this is the big question. You know, I'm sitting out here as an artist. I'm not a curator. I don't have a lot of curator friends and stuff. So it's, you know, how does an artist connect to a curator, mm. basically, is the question, yeah. kind of thing.
Well, it really depends. Sometimes we did have such cases where someone just dropped us an email asking, like, guys, I have this portfolio. I would love to come to Prague and be part of your residency program, and ended up successfully. Like we did have a cooperation with this artist. But mostly it depends whether there are various partners we try to cooperate with, not to make arbitrary decisions, not to be this like curator is just, you know, saying, you're gonna be my next residency artist. We rather consulted with people who might need a residency, and I'm talking about partners from Prague. We do have a lot of cooperation with institutions, galleries, art collectives from Prague, and say they're coming to us asking, like, guys, we do have this artist coming here next year to do a show, to prepare to work on the exhibition in Photograph Gallery or in ETC Gallery, and it would be perfect to have this opportunity to give him a chance and stay with you for 3 months. We can afford to pay him a fee for the exhibition and transportation costs. So, and then we take care of the rest.
Interesting. So you're not just sort of a government funded NGO. Sometimes you also work as a private public partnership, basically, where mm-hmm. a for-profit gallery might come to you and say, hey, I've got an artist coming, going to be having an exhibition.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, and it also happened.
Okay, your face is not saying that's true.
Yeah, because those two galleries I mentioned, they are project spaces, rather project spaces.
Okay.
I use the name gallery, yet to be honest, they're also NGOs.
Yeah, I was going to say the term gallery is thrown around very loosely here in this region, like where I was raised in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. area. Generally, like museum was defined for something that was a museum, and a gallery is a generally a for-profit thing, but it could be a non-profit thing, but it's more like a place where you could buy things, was the term gallery. But here, like they use National Gallery all the time, and almost everything is referred to as a gallery. Mm-hmm. It's very rare to find the term museum here.
The truth is that we do not have that many museums, and there is none museum or bigger institution that would be dedicated like only to
the National Gallery.
Well, but they have National Gallery is very problematic because they have so many massive collections and so many buildings, so many seats. They try to embrace like art from medieval time, from actually from ancient Greek antiquity in general,
all the way to contemporary.
No, and it's a suicider's mission. I mean, like, who can actually manage this amount of
in that amount of space? Yeah, it's not a massive space either. Okay, all right, back to you and your curatorial stuff. So so sometimes you partner with outside organizations to invite artists here, but let's say there's like just so you said one time there was a random artist that just said, hey, I've got a project I want to come do. But let's say devoid of that, so basically how can an artist that's out in the world get on your radar, basically? So make it so that you know their work for any curatorial project. At this point, I can say either you or your wife might just need to coordinate.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what's the approach? Like, how do artists find curators and get on in their database of knowledge? But in that way, also, how do curators get on like museum radars? Like, how does mm-hmm. that all happen? Is it just friends of friends and contacts?
Well, a lot of things are like, I think there's a lot of connection through just mingling with certain people, staying in a circle of this people, that people. I mean, I would not even, I don't want to be make it sound pejorative that it's something bad. It's just the way it is, and I guess the same works for movie industry, the same works for most of the semi showbiz industries, just like art. Yet I do believe that art is somehow more democratic, and we do have this like ideal that we can that everyone should be included, that there is like myth of extremely inclusive art community.
It's a total myth.
We like to think like that about ourselves. So.
Cream rises to the top. The best should be the ones set out as an example, not the mediocre. They're not the best. That's it.
But I'm honestly trying to figure out what would be the answer to your question. How would I get, like, how would artists get under my radar? And maybe the good example would be when I was working on an exhibition that was one of my projects, like side projects that were still done here in Meat Factory. It was last year, I was curating an exhibition called Slav Squatting and Its Discontents, and I wanted to have a better understanding what the art scene in Prague is all about. So I'm saying that this is more also focused on my domestic, on stuff that I know, yet I wanted to get it know better. And I start to research. I was just going from one gallery website to another, focusing on not the gallery, project space and artist run spaces, focusing on whom I kind of missed at the art scene, and trying to get to the people I did not know, and they are either very young or just right after school, or I just somehow, my brain capacity, I couldn't figure out that they are there.
But a good thing to note, sort of like the way you're talking is that the way that you find people in this day and age more often is through the internet, through websites, social medias, mm-hmm. these kinds of things, more often than going physically into a gallery space.
Yes, that's for sure.
So basically the idea is, if somebody wants to get on the radar of a curator, they should have an exhibition or do something sort of regionally near that curator, so the curator might just sort of become aware of it, basically, kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say so. And get yourself Instagram account. I think this is, I realize that I like to think of myself when I'm scrolling Instagram that I'm actually doing a research, which is, yeah, hard to believe. I'm not so sure whether it's actually true, but then
keep telling yourself that it's fine.
Yeah, I realize that there is a certain phenomenon. Like when you look at what is going on Instagram, you can see that there are people who are linked to another people, and it's just getting till the level. It's a critical mass. You cannot really say that this is just like circle of people mingling with each other.
It's tough. I mean, there's the recent study that says that like human beings were designed only to have like 150 people in their circle. I mean, when you go onto social media, all of a sudden it's like 150 million people or a billion people. Like, how do you sift through all that to find like the cream of the crop, to find the best of the best? Like, I can't do it. And I've tried. And it's tough. Like, I mean, things are, but not only that, but like the algorithms are constantly changing, but also people are changing. Like they'll open new accounts because their other account was closed, or they change their style. So they make a new account. I mean, everybody's lobbying and marketing to like, they're focusing so much on the get attention aspect that maybe is the quality getting better, or is the quality getting worse? Or is it just because we're seeing a sheer volume of it that it feels like there's so much more?
But I still believe that in the art world, and I think in every smaller community, in turn, like smaller community, I'm not talking about countries or you know, like regions, but yeah, let's say people from the arts, that Facebook especially, it works pretty, or any kind of social media, it works pretty fine. I mean, you can really communicate, and you could, once it's getting too big, too massive, then you can see that there is no quality. I also have a comparison with even smaller and more hermetic group of people. I happen to play this discipline of a sport that is quite, it's still not very popular. It's called bike polo. I don't know if you heard of it.
Polo on bikes.
So imagine like you have on one side, you have this like British aristocrat riding on a horse playing polo, and then you have the bike messenger from Seattle, the place of the origin of hardcore bike polo, and this is more or less you can get the image who is the bike polo player. It's more like
tattooed, long hair. Yeah, I got you.
This kind of, and it,
bike messengers.
Yeah. So, and when I observe how social media works within group of bike polo players, which is also very limited, it's like in Czech Republic, you have 20, 25 people who are playing bike polo. There's no federation. There are rules, but of course there's no business yet included in this. And it's very bike punk spirit, so to say. And I see that, Facebook works fantastic for this, like in order to communicate, to share events, to organize, say a tournament in this place or another place, to fundraise your trip to Australia because there is a next World's Champs in Australia and you do not have money yet. You know that you're gonna win this tournament, so you gotta go. And your friends would actually fundraise you. And this, I think, it's interesting just to see how in a smaller circle of people, social media might work just fine. But we're kind of drifting from the...
Well, no, but okay, but that idea of like a support network that's being created by social media is fabulous. But do you feel like that actually happens for artists? Because I feel like it's almost the opposite happens for artists. Like in general, my position, it's very pessimistic, I know, but my position is basically when an artist goes out in public and puts up their artwork, everybody wants them to fail. A and B, nobody wants to help them succeed. They don't care. It's a solo practice. You do it by yourself. It's not like a team sport, like bike polo. Yeah. It's a solo practice, and basically nobody cares if you succeed, and nobody is going to help you. Like literally, like the only person that's going to help you is you and your own loved ones, and maybe a very very tight little knit group. But like that's about as far as it's going to go. So I feel like social media doesn't actually create that support network that it does for other things, such as, you know, your bike polo kind of idea.
Well, but when it comes to information, I think it's a fabulous way how to share information. Also, when say open calls, as I mentioned, we do not have open call for international artists to come here, but we often use platforms such as Le Club de Opportunité or
I'm sorry, Artist say Pop, that one more time.
It's a French group on Facebook. I mean, it has a French name, the Club of Opportunities, and I think you could find it if you just type it there. It's around 3,000 people just sharing information about every open call, and it's also very inclusive, so you can just, you know, click join and get in and get some information about all type of
open calls. I will find that and put it in the description of this podcast.
Mm-hmm. I can send some more. I'm some more groups that I know. That'd and most of them, they are also not most of them, they have this restriction that you're not supposed to post any information where you're supposed to pay for it. Like, you're not, there is no paid residencies.
Well, I mean, and that's an issue too that keeps coming up, because like, I look around at, you know, I'll sit down, okay, I'm an artist, I've got a full-time job, I'm working, and then on top of that, I've got to enter competitions and enter residency calls and do those. And the amount of work and time and effort, and then on top of that, money that I have to spend, whether it's an entry fee or, you know, sometimes like you'll even enter a residency and then get down the line, and then suddenly they go, oh, by the way, you have to pay for XYZ that we didn't tell you about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's sort of soul draining sometimes. I mean, it's certainly financial draining.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, constantly there are exponentially more competitions, as far as like just like, you know, just exposure kind of competitions, and it feels like exponentially more residencies that exist in the world, but many of them seem to have set themselves up as for-profit or money-earning scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you all don't do that. You, everything you do is sponsored or paid for by either... I know the city of Prague gives a good amount of money.
Yes.
And you do you all have other sponsors? How else do you all get funded?
We're applying from 15 to 20 different sources, different institutions to get our budget kind of done. So we do have support from the Ministry of Culture here in Prague. Here in Czech Republic, we do have support from the city of Prague. We have this like long-lasting grant, 4 years grant. We have to put everything we print in Meat Factory. We do have this obligation to put information about the exact amount of money they are giving us this very year.
And you know, I it's saw a Czech that crown, recently.
So there's so many zeros. They're like,
I saw that recently. I think it was the thing I was here for last night. At the bottom of it, it said 10 million Czech crowns from the Ministry of whatever. And I'm like, that's a lot of money for just that one thing. Mm. But it's not for the one thing. It's your general operating budget, right?
Yeah, that's
what I figured. But do you get corporate sponsorships, or are you staying with only sort of the
no
corporate sponsors? So you're only sort of government and not NGO relations kind of thing.
We cooperate with various foundations that have their goals and setting some sort of, or support some cooperation, international cooperation, say between Germans and Czechs. There's this Czech German Fund of the Future. And loads of different embassies, institutes, French Institute, Cervantes, Polish Institute.
So lots of cultural exchange programs, kind of like cultural exchange programs, is very common.
Yes.
Mostly EU related, not too many outside EU.
However, we also had
Israel,
like long lasting cooperation with. American embassy, just to say, because
but that was with the previous ambassador.
I think we still had one ongoing project near 2017. So that 2018 last year. So I don't know what's up with that. But yeah, I mean, the politics are just always going for worse than worse. So maybe we can skip that. Luckily, we do have like generous people, and the whole granting system here in Prague, it's fairly, it's just okay. It's really, they support bigger institutions, they support smaller institutions. When your project space that runs already for 2 years, you can apply for a grant and get to up to, I don't know, $10,000 euros,
yeah,
just to have, you know, just to have some basic money to rent a space, and there are various.
There are a lot. I mean, but that's pretty substantial. I mean, there are lots of places in the world. I'm thinking specifically of the Americas, and even, you know, I've lived in the Middle East also. Like there are not a lot of places that support the arts in this way outside of like the EU. Mm-hmm. I mean, the EU seems to be sort of the most financially supportive place I've ever found for the arts, period. it's ingrained in their history, their culture, like that they should support the arts, that it's a primary part of it. I mean, here in Prague it's a primary part because glass and the garnet and the ceramics and all the cultural historical stuff here have become a tourist part of the tourist industry as well, which now of course is bleeding over into contemporary art and contemporary design and also these other things that are becoming touristic reasons to come to Prague. So therefore, them investing in the arts basically is an investment in getting more tourists here.
But I think still that okay, maybe this is my idealistic approach to it, but from what I've heard when I was doing my research in the very beginning, when I still was based in Krakow, I really badly wanted to move to Prague because it's so beautiful, so liberal, etc. So I discovered that the important change happened, how to name it? Yeah, just the change for better happened here in Prague in the second decade of 21st century, when artists and people and curators, young ambitious curators, art workers, art professionals, they made a huge impact on both municipality and Ministry of Culture. They were protesting against certain procedures and they really fight for their right to apply for money, to have more and more money from the budget. And
I don't know anything about this. I just moved here a year and a half ago, so this is good. I like this.
Yeah, this is something very unique, and I think that was back then quite progressive, and nowadays this is what we need to do, especially in countries of you know, Visegrad countries or Central Eastern European countries, where it power is clearly not in your favor. They want to get rid of you or just make you do some right wing whatever populist artworks that of course never gonna happen. And so I think it's always a matter of negotiation and just claiming your rights and asking for more, also in terms of money, because after all this is not something you're just, you know, this is not to feed the monkey, but really to be able to live out of what you are doing. And I find that somehow when I compare, you know, this easy comparison, Poland and Czech Republic, there are so many points of connection, there are so many similarities, there are such a massive differences, and yet I gotta say, like when you take a look at Warsaw gallery scene, and I'm talking about commercial galleries, you have around 20 galleries that are trying to make money out of what they're doing, representing artists, selling, going to art fairs. It's completely different approach than what you see here in Prague, where you have around 30 project spaces, and on the top of that you have 7 commercial galleries. And
it's a very specific number, so there are really only 7 commercial galleries here?
I would say so, yeah. I think that I might be wrong, because it's just a couple of days ago one guy decided, I'm gonna do art business. I'm into art business.
Another guy decided I'm out.
But yeah, I think there are around 7 commercial galleries. The oldest one is Hand & Kastner. I just, once I wrote the text, and I was especially like, particularly, what are the differences between Poles and Czechs when it comes to art scene, and also why, trying to answer this question, why do we have so many project spaces and so few galleries? And in Poland it's just upside down. So, and this is it mainly, it's because support you can get here allows you to live on what, like, I know so many artists doing different type of work, running a gallery, being editor at Artichoke platform, or working for ArtMap, this you know, this map
where running a podcast,
like, this is somehow, I don't know if you necessarily need to be represented by a gallery and then sell your works to be able to support yourself. Of course, this is like an ideal dream, but maybe it's not valid anymore. Maybe this is,
and I love the, yeah, this is what, okay, I don't know if I told this to you, but like, but the intention of the podcast is a twofold thing. I have what I'm calling that my quantifiable results and my quality results. So the quantifiable results is, I'm going to ask you later on, and I ask every guest, I want to have a piece of my artwork exhibited in the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. What is your recommendation for something I should do to put me on that path? So that's my qualitative or quantitative thing. But qualitative is that I want to try and figure out how, in this day and age, with all the different formats, so the project spaces, the NGOs, the for-profit galleries, the museums, the curators, the collectors, the online, the social media, the website, like, how can creative people, so I don't care whether it's artists or curators or gallery owners or whoever, but how can people make a living? Mm-hmm. I'm not looking for, like, how do we become Andy Warhol and you know, like the big, you know, how do we become Saatchi and the big of the bigs, but like, just to make it so that we all are happy, like we get enough money and we get enough support to be able to do what we want to do without being fearful of not having enough money for our bills next month, basically. What's in your mind? Like, how has it changed? Like, you say, like, websites and social media is helping. It might be things are transitioning.
Mm-hmm. And I also believe that united we stay, divided we fall. Or
but we don't. We're not united.
But if you want to be, okay, let's eliminate this category, successful artist. But if you want to make a living from art, I think it's necessary that you know that you're part of the community, that you know other people who are dealing with the same as you do, who are part of the art scene. And then
that's what this podcast is trying to do, is to try to unite these people, because like, we're all sitting in our studios or our offices or whatever going like, I want to do this, but I don't know how to do that. I want to connect with these people. I want to meet a curator to find my work. How do I do that? Mm-hmm. You know, I want to apply for a residency. How do I do that? So like, I've listened to a bunch of podcasts and unfortunately they fall into a couple different categories for me, which is either they're sort of telling me how to make a living, like they're saying like, oh, you need to follow these step-by-step instructions, or they're just a sort of introduction level, like it's just like, oh, you know, to try to get a gallery you gotta put together a nice portfolio, like we all know that, like that's too basic. Or on the other end of the spectrum, it's like way too institutional, like they're sitting there like theorizing about Kant and Freudian, and it's just, it's too intellectual, too art speaky, either or tutorial, where they're telling me what to do, which is, I'm not asking my guests to tell me how to do it, but I'm asking for the guests to like be involved, like figure out how can we all be a little bit more involved. How can we come together with your knowledge is great, and I'm going to ask another curator probably the same questions I'm asking you, and they'll probably give me a different answer. And then it's up to the person listening and me, and, you know, whoever's listening, to make up their own mind which one they think is probably more appropriate for them. The thing is there's no perfect answer for anybody in the creative industry. So the question is, how many different answers can I get to try and find the one that's most right for any one person? Mm. Does that make sense?
It does. I think that, yeah. I guess
it was very long-winded. I apologize.
There's this Latin saying. I won't be able to to bring it now, but the examples are the one we should follow. Like, the examples are important. So I think that if you have several examples, several
basically stories, like one person doesn't have the absolute knowledge, like the perfect knowledge for anybody else in the arts industry. I mean, maybe it holds true in the accounting or law or doctors or whatever. Like, maybe there are perfect ways to do those industries, but in the arts industry there's not, because we're all so individual that we each have to make it our own. So trying to find get 3 to 5 different things and try and find a nice average, something that we feel comfortable with from all the different outcomes.
Also, something that crossed my mind just now, I was because I mentioned that it's important that you're part of the scene, that there is that you have people who support you in this way or another. Of course, we're all individuals, but we go to school, which is a structure where you have to socialize, where you're making friends and all this. And yesterday we just had opening here in Meat Factory, and I see all the time people who are working here just like right before the opening, they just need an extra pair of hands, people who are willing to work. And most of them, they're coming from either Art Academy in Brno or from Prague. Sometimes it happens that they're not at school anymore. They're not students. They're already artists, and they're, I don't know, in their 30s. And wow, apparently they're quite successful. They need some money, even though they sell works once every while, but they still come here to work, to just get this silly job, just paint the wall.
It's a sense of community. Like, I love doing that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, I love coming, repainting the walls, sanding the walls, painting the walls, redoing the floors, prepping it, the gallery for another exhibition. Like, I mean, it is a nice sense of community, but it doesn't feel like that's as common. Now, maybe here at Meat Factory, there is this great sense of community, but it doesn't feel like that's common in most places.
Well, I think it's quite common for Prague, because we, after all, this conditions that I was saying, like, it's so great, you can make your living this way, you don't have to be part of the gallery, but still we're living in a super precarious condition. And maybe I'm so enthusiastic about it because I'm 32 and I have a full-time job, but what is going to happen when I'm gonna be 52 and there won't be any a source of money for my retirement?
Or right. Well, you're 32 with full insurance, I'm sure, as well, like national insurance, health insurance. Yeah, which is a big issue for artists in other parts of the world. Like, I mean, in America, I could not afford having insurance as a practicing artist. It's just far too expensive. But here, of course, there's national health care, so that's very nice.
That's something I value, definitely. So there's always, I think there are always options how to make your living in an art system that is somehow based on, that it's not so competitive, that it's not based on the market, but it's more based on the money coming from the taxpayers, after all. I know that it's like this approach is super different from, for instance, what is going on in US, but it's just making a decision whether your whole economy, art economy, is based on the private funds or whether it's state support, I think.
Let's take it back a step. So I want to understand this. So so here at Meat Factory, you are, reasonably well supported by the municipalities and the government. Yes. What kind of, do they give you certain guidelines? I'm thinking back, like, I used to work at some museums and stuff in the United States, and like they would say, like, oh, we'll invest this much money in this thing because we're expecting this many visitors and we expect like this demographic, and we they had like quantifiable goals that they intended to achieve, and like basically when they got grants from certain organizations, they were expected to meet these criteria that they laid out. Do you have the same kind of, does the municipality sort of put the same kind of stuff on you as well?
Sure, Sure.
What kind of things are they? Are they asking like quantity, quality, like geographical location, like supporting people from certain areas?
Well, first of all, you need to present. You need to have your own like your whole project ready, and apply with the
right.
The project and the indicators.
So that might be the word for what I'm talking about.
I guess I'm always lost in this bureaucracy, so I'm not the best person to probably speak about it. But yeah, you do need to have a certain media presence. You need to have cover from this TV and that TV, and it's all it's not them who are saying, listen, now you have to get to know people from IDNES because the Babiš owns it and he's a prime minister. You need to get this medium to talk about what is going on in Meat Factory and any other project space or gallery space. It's not like that. It's on you to decide who or what kind of media you want to work with. And since we do have four different dramaturgies here in Meat Factory, we have music department, we have residencies, gallery space, and theater. So it happens very often that we have different media covering different events here. And we need to do this. And of course, that leads you to not only a media presence, but also having people over, just visitors, numbers of visitors. This is something that they need to know. And other than that, I think we can pretty much operate with these sources, with the support, the way we like it. Sometimes it's more specific, like we cooperate with IDU, which is Divadelny Ustav, instead of Divadelny Ustav. I'm not sure what is the English translation of their name, yet they are much more focused on supporting artists coming from countries such as Georgia, so-called Eastern Partnership, like Ukraine, Russia, Indonesia. They were willing to, cover ticket from Jakarta to Prague. That was huge support, especially that, and this is one disadvantage, we do not support travel costs, or we rarely support it, because this is something also, this is like the, when you think about fundraising your art project, finding money to support your trip, to support your ticket, is the easiest way you can do to get it from local national institute like Polish Institute, or to get it through some foundation. It seems like I know it from myself, traveling to Georgia and back, Open Society Foundation was willing to pay me
interesting
some money for travel costs.
All right, so back to curatorial practices. So like let's go through sort of the process of what you do here at Meat Factory. So there will be, let's take the open call one, because that's probably the sort of the most common for everybody else that is listening. So an open call would be sent out. There would be certain criteria. People would send stuff in. Mm-hmm. And then you do what? Like, so what's your step-by-step process of going through the whole thing?
Well, first of all, maybe it would be good to also mention that we try to limit the amount of text in the open call, in a motivation letter. We wanted to make it somehow shorter and just to make it more sufficient, not to have these long letters, right. Love letters.
You limit it to 500 words, I think, or 500 characters.
500 words.
500 words.
Characters would be a bit.
That's like, a bit. That's
I want to go there. I really, really badly want to go. That's it. Well,
500 characters, really?
No, 500 words.
Oh, okay.
We have 500 words, of course. But people are not willing to keep it that short. But that doesn't really matter. It's just that we did not want it to have those long motivation letters written.
Okay, right there for a second, though. Let me digress a little bit. So, like, I work for lensculture.com and do reviews online for them. And every day I'm looking at artist portfolios where I'm seeing images and sometimes text, sometimes not text. And I'm constantly having to say, like, the text is important. You need text, and the text needs to be this and this and this and this. And I realized, I mean, I've been doing this for them for 3 years, and I sat back and I said, yeah, I don't know if the recommendations I'm giving them are correct. Like, I'm not the person, the curator on the other end, reading them or looking at them and making any judgment calls. I'm a participant. I'm an artist looking at another artist saying, like, oh, I wish it was more like this because it would connect better with me. So the question is, for you, when you receive a portfolio of artwork and some text, partly how important is the text? How important is the portfolio, the ordering of the portfolio, the flow of the portfolio, the text, the relationship of the text? Is it incredibly important? Like, would you completely just be, if somebody had stunning portfolio and a horrible text, would you just be like, nope, I'm not doing it? Or is there some trade-off in there?
Well, yeah, I do believe that we're all dealing with arts, and we are particularly sensitive toward visual material. So I think I could accept situation when the motivation letter is just crap and portfolio is incredible. And I really can see that, okay, this guy or this artist, she
or
went
girl.
Through...
No gender specific.
No gender specific at all. So this artist, she went through... she had this residency... somewhere. Oh, okay. she had this,
but you are looking
career.
At their CV, so the CV is important.
I would, yeah, there is at some point I definitely would have a look at the CV and just you know, first to know what school she graduated from, and then just to have a better understanding what kind of...
Okay, just on a basic sort of structural format of the CV to try and help anybody. I mean, is what's the most important thing of a CV and sort of going down in hierarchy? So most important, school?
Well, I think that the two information that I'm always looking at when it comes to CV is education and then the history of exhibitions from last 2 years. 3 years, maybe.
Wow, just the last two or three
Don't
years, though.
Don't get me things from 2010, because it's just like, it doesn't make any sense to me, at least. And I know this kind of weird enthusiasm you have when you're just putting down all the information in your CV and you're thinking like, oh my God.
My CV looks so great. Like 10 pages long. It's fabulous.
And it's fantastic that you do believe it's like that. I don't think that any other person but you would share this enthusiasm.
It's probably
because
true.
I remember this for myself, like putting together my first CV and thinking like, oh my God, this is decent. And then no one would respond to any of my emails for it. So I think this is completely unnecessary to just overload your CV with information.
Like, let's say there's another meat factory in Brno, or Vienna or Paris, whatever. Their criteria for why they choose the residents to come to them is going to be different because their culture, their community is different. So, what are some of the characteristics that you look for when you're choosing an artist to be a resident at the meat factory?
Mm-hmm. I think it depends on what sort of project we are also choosing him, her to be part of. And yeah, maybe I should specify, we have these partnerships and this is pretty open. Doesn't really matter when you're making, whether you're making sound art. I want to say sound art, but both me and Lucia, we do not really like sound art somehow, so...
Don't say like. Well, it's not that you don't like it, it's that you simply don't have the resources to really pull it off well here. Like, you don't have beautiful soundproof rooms, you don't have the correct recording equipment, amplification equipment. So, I mean, it's not that you don't want it or like it, it's that you simply don't have the resources to offer it to the public and to the artist as well as they would like it to be.
I think it's simply we're sitting next to Shape, a platform catalog. This is music department domain. They are dealing with all sort of music and sound art and sound installation. They are more into this. What we do mostly is the visual arts, so from painting, sculpture, like all this traditional media, installation,
performance
as well. So yeah, we keep it very open, and this is all about the mutual cooperation. So this is one big chunk of our program. Then we have residencies that are more specifically oriented toward one topic, and we have this big ongoing program called the New Dictionary of Old Ideas, which is all about identity politics and Central Eastern European region. We started last year with a bunch of other institutions, mostly independent, so to say, institutions, the ones that are not subsidized by the country. They're not part of this national network. We kicked off this platform. We were simply giving an opportunity for four residents from each partner organization to come here and stay with us for overall 6 months, I believe. So you have two artists coming here, each one of them for 2 months, and two curators coming for 1 month. And that was specifically oriented on artists who are somehow working within the political realm of art, or just in making art that is fairly about history, politics, about identity politics, about the region, and it can be no medium specified. And then we have dance and choreography studio that speaks for itself, I guess, with the ballet floor, with it's a beautiful, super clean studio. We have studios where we offer them to someone who we know that will cause a lot of mess, just dirty, proper artist work, hardcore studio practice. Next year we're going to kick off this food studio where that was my idea, so I will pursue it as a platform where people will meet each other, mostly people from Central Eastern Europe and from Southeast Asia and East Asia, and use food as a medium to communicate, just as the thing that can actually connect you. And I also want to keep it somehow low profile, not to think about the whole history of the food or the politics of the food, but food as a really connecting element, something so
like what they talk about on Chef's Table and on Netflix.
Yeah
That's great.
As I mentioned, we have several artists coming here with recommendation from different partners here in Prague. This is also something that we really like, because when you get offered to exhibit somewhere, say in Budapest, and then your invitation was followed by another invitation from Budapest institution saying that we know about your exhibition and now we'd like to expand it and give you a 2 months residency, so you can work on your show, you have it everything paid and all that stuff, and if you have capacity and time capacity to do it, most of the people who are coming here, they're really using it as a production, as a space where they can produce new work, where they can do a bit of a research how their work would also respond to the local audience. And I think this is something that we value highly, because that's the type of residency where you're really getting somehow the connection to the to Prague, because first you're coming here to work on the show. There will be something that will remain after your time here. You will have to come here again to take it down or just for another event. And it does make sense. You're always in touch with this place. There is a residency. You get to know people.
Just as a little finishing point on the residency parts, do all residents have exhibitions here? Is that sort of a nature? So that's not mandatory?
No. We have too many residents. We would have to throw 40 shows or 30 shows a year. That would be impossible. What we do have, though, it's the open studios event. So once every 3 months, we have open studios where all the studios are open. You can travel. You can take a journey through all the studios, speak to the artist. mostly it's also, there are a lot of collateral events like performances, and we have also our permanent artists who are willing to participate, and permanent residents, which is, there's only one permanent resident. But
during the open studio, are things for sale? Can people come and purchase stuff? Is that a thing, or is it just to exhibit, just to show?
It's just mostly, yeah, it's to exhibit, not to keep it super exclusive, and not to provide some sort of contact with the space.
Okay.
But I don't think it's really happening.
No. Okay.
Sometimes we had some artists who, for instance, who produced a book, and then you can buy a book for like 50 crowns or something like that. But
that's a very cheap book.
But, okay. It was more like, it's like coloring book.
Okay, yeah, okay. So that's fine.
I think they're not, you know, the whole tradition of collecting art here in Czech Republic, it's there's not such a thing really. It's not a big phenomenon, and I think that 40 years of communism destroyed all the elites, and people are not so willing to, you know, when they're, even when they're nouveau rich, they're not like super eager to buy art. I was recently at the concert of Backstreet Boys. Do you know Backstreet Boys?
Yeah, my wife went, actually.
Yeah?
Yep.
Did she like it?
She did. She was absolutely, she was all the way up at the podium, like they paid the extra for the nice seats and everything, or nice standing area.
Nice.
Yeah, not my generation. I'm a little older than that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, generation speak. I understand that we're time is passing, we're getting older. There were no kids at the, I thought that it would be like a lot of teenagers just following Backstreet Boys and
no.
Looking into Kevin's face. No.
Yeah.
Just 30 years old.
People reliving their youth.
So, but I was just thinking like how that these guys, probably they're making such an amount of money that at some point they would start to think about, what are we gonna do with those empty walls? We need to buy some art. And I just think it doesn't really happen here in Czech Republic. The rich people, they have a bad taste, or for sure there are a few very generous collectors, but I think it's not part of the art world that you would have collectors who are really like, you know, following what you do, that they see their role as a supporter.
And I've run into that a few times. I've spoken with a few people already, and they've said, they use terms like the collector's market is not sort of mature, kind of like it's just, there aren't enough of them. They're not well educated enough about like what is good art and what's worth collecting and kind of things like this. Like, so there, it's just a, you know, partly that the collectors are not up to that high standard of like, let's say, a London collector or a Paris collector or a Berlin collector. So it's just not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always yet. You know, it's not to say it's not going to be there, but it's going to take probably another 20, 30 years to get the culture to the point where they start, or not start, but like before they're sort of at that equivalent level. Because a lot of the people I talk to, it's interesting how in the Czech Republic, they're very Czech-centric. Like you focus more on Czech artists and supporting Czech artists and taking Czech artists and sending them around the world to experience other cultures. But what about bringing artists from other cultures to the Czech Republic? I mean, most of the, this is not you specifically, but most of the galleries and stuff locally, they seem to only carry Czech and Slovak artists and that's it. And they just don't even stock other artists.
Mm.
I'm not asking you to give an opinion on that because you're not in that specific world, but it's interesting how it's very Czech-centric is the easiest way I can phrase it. But
on the other hand, I don't know, I was in Madrid a couple of months ago when there was Estampa Art Fair. There's this big Arco Art Fair, and then there is Estampa Art Fair mostly for galleries from Madrid, from Spanish context. And maybe this is not the best example, but they were also like fairly Ibero-centric.
Yeah, they're very nationalistic, basically. Like, I mean, yeah, I'm not, I don't know if it's a bad thing or a good thing. Maybe it's great and I just don't understand it.
I guess it's a question of a market that when collectors are coming to the gallery, they wanna support their art, like they wanna support Czech artists because they're Czechs, and
that's a very that's a term that I hear a lot, is basically I want to support Czech artists, whether it's a gallery owner, a curator, or a collector. Mm-hmm. They all say I want to support Czech artists, and that is fabulous. I wish I was a Czech artist. Mm-hmm. that's a great thing. Maybe my child will be like that, so that they can get supported.
But I guess, you know, this is also something that I would like to strongly support, is the presence of international artists here, not just as a residence, but as people who decide to move here and just pursue their career in Czech Republic. And we already kind of used to it because there are so many Slovaks living here, so many artists from Slovakia moving here, so many artists who just decided to come here for studies. Yeah. Okay, I definitely wanted to bring one text to the table, something that I find quite important, and yeah, to have a better understanding of how you can provide yourself a decent living within art community. There's this text, "Dark Matter of Art" by Gregory Cholet, where he's trying, you know, to make a comparison to this division. Like there's 1% that owns everything, and you know, one ring to rules this all. Like we know it from Lady Gaga. If there's only 1% that believes in you. Okay, I'm making too many anecdotes. Let's get back to Gregory Cholet. Based on statistics and on his research, he specified that there are 4%. And that 4% from people from the art world, they're actually able to pay their bills with what they're doing. 4% against 96 hobbyists, 96
people. And of that 4%, only 1% of them will ever be a household name.
Or even less, I would, yeah.
Well, no, but yeah, so like 100%, 4%, and of the 4% extended out to 100%, 1% of those will become a household name. So we were told this when I went to grad school, like, but they rounded it. They said 5% instead of 4%.
But you know, this is it's not a conclusion of his text. This is just the beginning where he's just trying to deconstruct this concept and figure out how we can you know, develop a certain critique and what would be the means, what can we do about it. And he's describing several groups of artists, mostly art collectives. I think they're only art collectives in his text, who are using internet to rethink the concept of authorship, I'm not able now to bring any names from these collectives. I think that PEX is not that long, and you can find it online, The Dark Matter of Art.
And we'll put a link to that in the description of the podcast.
It's just a great inspiration and also some sort of guidebook what kind of practices you can develop when you don't want to be part of the art market, or you have certain suspicions toward the art market and you just want to figure out like alternative options, alternative techniques, and think about your work as subversive art that deals in one way or another with the system that has already been established, that is already existing. So yeah, that was something that inspired me also to rethink my own position. As I mentioned before, being a curator wasn't always the super easy. This is actually my dream job, and I had to go through a lot to get to the point where I am.
What kind of training did you have? What's did you go to school for being a curator, art history, all that?
Yeah, I did art history. Okay. 5 years program. We were before the Bologna how you call it, program, where you have 3 years and then, you know, bachelor, and then you go for master. So I was not able to do it. It was super conservative, very boring studies. And from the second year of my studies, I start to apply for internship, and I was working in one gallery, then in another gallery, commercial galleries.
They love interns. They're free employees.
Oh, yes, they do. They do. Yeah,
they will use them and feed them up and spit them out.
Unfortunately, this is true. And yeah, and then I had the step by step. I decided I want to be a curator, and I had the opportunity to work freelance. I was working also in one institution where I got brutally kicked out. But already there, I was able to establish certain international connection as a part of my programming, of my idea how this should be run, what kind of partnership we'd like to have. And the first one and only partnership we had was with Prague, and that was my chance to see how exactly I'm like how things are run here, and what are the major differences, how Prague art scene is better than Polish or worse than, but you know, I just wanted to explore it better. And then at some point I realized I gotta move here. But I think it's also, you know, it's a Czech Republic, it's a wet dream of every Polish. This is maybe I'm getting
actually I was gonna ask you, like, at some point or another after this is done, I was hoping to get some recommendations of some people in Poland to go talk to and have on the podcast as well. So hopefully you have some recommendations of some people there, and I'll take a trip over there and do it there, because my next step is Berlin. After I'm gonna do a number of these in Prague, then I'm gonna go to Berlin, then I might go to Warsaw, and hopefully and Amsterdam, and then Paris and London, and so on. So because I want the podcast, I want to not be Prague centric. I mean, I'm starting in Prague just because it's easiest, because I live here, but I want to be sure to include as far reaching and as many diverse inputs as I can into this whole idea of basically learning how the art world works, because it's so different everywhere. Like everywhere you go, they give you different inputs on, like, oh yes, you should do this, oh this is important, you know. Like if I were probably to go to Paris, they would probably say that on the CV, oh I want to see everything you've ever done, I want it to be 10 pages long and all this, like right, versus you don't want all that. It's interesting, like here also, okay, back to your curatorial work, freelance curatorial work. I've heard, this is new to me, I had never heard of this before just recently, that for-profit galleries hire curators to come in and curate exhibitions. Yes? I mean, I've heard of that before. Now, generally, I know it is basically the gallery would pay a flat fee to a curator, and they would just curate the artist's works or the group show or whatever it is. But now I've been hearing that there's a different thing where instead of a flat fee to a curator, they actually give a percentage of the sales to the curator. Is that true?
It happened to me once, yes. But it was also very specific, because I was... So I had this gallery I was working with for like 3 years in Warsaw. It was a great moment at the art scene in Warsaw, because all of a sudden you had more and more galleries. The number wasn't 20 as it is now, but it was 10. But quite a lot of buyers, quite a lot of collectors. So it was a super... That was a time of prosperity. That doesn't really mattered for me back then, because I was paid rather... I was underpaid. I was not able to kind of make
a living. I don't believe I've ever heard of anybody in the arts going, I was overpaid. No, it just doesn't happen. But go on.
But having said that, I had a big sentiment for this gallery, and I had the chance to curate there an exhibition after 5 years that I left it. And I came back to Warsaw, and I was working on the show there. I knew that I wanted to get any money for any curatorial fee for my work, but the gallery owner, she offered me this deal that whenever something is gonna get sold, you can have.
And did that work? 5%. Was that beneficial to you? Did it work? Like basically, if it sold one piece, okay.
So
I mean, that's the question. Is like, I mean, everybody keeps trying to come up with new creative ways to make it so people try to make money, so that people want to continue to work in the arts, and people feel like they've been treated well and all this. And so like they keep coming up with these like new schemes basically to try and figure these things out. And this one was new to me, this idea that a curator would come in and be paid off of the commission of the sales. Like, to me, a curator is a pure, they're a pure thing. They're untainted. They are like the most innocent of ideals is a curator. That they come in with their blind beliefs and their optimism, and they have nothing to do with money or museum attendance or any, they don't care about any of that. They're just all about beautiful exhibition, period. Quality works. That's my vision of a curator. I'm not a curator, but that's my outsider's vision of a curator. And then this idea that curators are basically being given a percentage of sales, to me, feels like it's tainting that.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it's okay, because then you're somehow, you like the idea of selling some works and making money out of it, and then you start to, instead of being a curator, you're gonna become a dealer. And why would I get a percentage if I can sell it on my own from artist studio? And all this temptation rises, and it just doesn't make any sense. If you want to be a dealer, be a dealer. Like, you can be a well-educated dealer with best taste, working from time to time as a curator, and not curator who's just selling some stuff from his from his garage sale or like,
okay. I'm on your side on that. I thought it was a very weird thing when I heard it, that the curators were being paid a percentage of sales in galleries. I thought that was odd. But okay, back to your curatorial. So you're currently, your wife is also a curator. Now, where does she work? Or does she, like?
She's the director of Inge Halupecki Society. One of their main projects is Halupecki Award, which is this award for young Czech artists.
Right.
That happens every year.
I've seen it.
So this is her main activity. Yet. It's the platform she runs is also open for other projects. It's not only about the prize itself, but it's also about working with because you're gonna get a prize, and what you're gonna get, some support, some money, you can have a residency, this is what you get. Next year there will be another winner, next year, and you're getting forgotten. So I highly value that they work, for instance, with people who got or who were in the selection in a finalist in 1992, for instance.
Okay.
So those are names sometimes that you don't get to see, sometimes even at all. Okay, there's people like David Czerny among them.
The art market is getting faster and faster. Like the trends are going faster and faster, and so therefore, people winning awards, they're losing favor faster and faster. Mm-hmm. Like it's a bit difficult to keep up with all of that stuff.
But I think we have to, and we gotta get on a slightly slower pace, not to be driven by this novelty.
How?
All the time. So I run residencies, but I think I was trying to rethink what would be the best answer, like how to be a successful artist, and I was thinking maybe the best way to become one is just to work locally, to build yourself a local, like within your own community, build yourself a name, build a network of people you like, you can have a nice conversation about art with, and from time to time, basing on this quality, go for the residency to contaminate the different art scene, to have just to scout, just to have a better understanding how they do it in Taiwan, how they do it in Czech Republic. But everything has to be firstly local and then international. I really hate this. And I'm not supposed to say I hate, but I.
You can hate whatever you want. Yeah, that's your right.
Well, it's it's also not about. I don't want to address anyone. I want to address certain stereotype of a super busy curator who's always. I cannot pick that phone. I was on the flight to,
Hong Kong. I see them on Instagram all the time. They're somewhere new every day. It's amazing.
And I think it's first of all, it's not. Flying is evil, so you should not be doing that. Like, you should not fly that much if you wanna, if you're you think about the future of yourself and your planet, this is
beside the radiation that you get while you're up there as well. But
yeah, so it's just not it doesn't really make sense, and I think it's a part of this agenda that I particularly don't like, the super speedy accelerated curatorial approach. When does it really necessarily mean that you have seen the show before the opening? And if you are a curator, if you sign your name as a curator, do you really need to have a look at the show, or you can just do it through the phone because you're busy doing something else? And this is wrong. This is something I don't like. I really enjoy this intimacy, and I think that what is important in, when it comes to art is intimate connection with the art piece that you don't even share with anyone, that you just have it, that you like it, you love it, you just keep it for yourself. The connection with the art piece as a beholder, the connection with the artist as a friend, as a someone who can help, as a collector, someone who would write a text. And then your professional approach. So when I'm working on something, I'm trying to be honest. I don't necessarily need to travel around the world and like see every Venice Biennial to be a successful curator. I think it's way better just to stay in your own place and enable people to travel, like in case of the residencies, or just make sure that people who are coming here, they get enough of good treat, that you're hospitable, that you can really show them that this is a really nice place. And Prague is very helpful when it comes to that. I think that I never met anyone during the residency, and strangely enough, we counted that in the course of last 2.5 years, we had 70 artists. So we get to know in the time of 2 years, we got to know 70 artists. That's I would say it's a pretty big number. And I never met anyone who would be like, Prague, it's hideous. Take me out of here.
In the winter, you could have that feeling about Prague, but
go to Warsaw. I mean, you're gonna go there. Please go there in winter.
Okay.
you're gonna love it.
I like the cold, gray. Personally. Actually, if I had a choice between cold or hot, I would definitely go for cold, because you can put more clothing on, but you can't take more clothing off. Like, there's only so naked you can get in the summer.
Well, but. The weather is one thing, but then I'm super satisfied with this liberal element you can track in Prague. The fact that it's affordable, that there's so many.
I just moved here from Abu Dhabi, so Prague is extremely liberal.
Uh-huh.
Well, but, yeah, okay, fine. Abu Dhabi is incredibly hot. You're correct. However, it's also air conditioned in 99% of your daily life, so that's a little different. But as far as liberal, like, I just came from the Middle East. Like, that is not liberal. This is a Prague and the Czech Republic is a complete polar opposite to the Middle East and its subtle encouragements of not to do certain things. They don't come out and say it. They don't say, like, don't do that. But they sort of encourage you not to do certain things. Mm-hmm. And you basically do it if you want to keep your job. At least for me.
We don't have, to look far and to go to Middle East to discover this sort of approach. I think in Poland already, you can really feel the difference how people behave around, like, that there has to be a certain rule that you have to obtain, and there is always this struggle whether I should obtain it or not, and then there is always this kind of sensation that people kind of are squeezed under the pressure of rules, and doesn't really matter where they're coming.
In Poland,
yeah, we're talking about Poland.
What's going on in Poland? We're not going to get into politics.
No, let's not. But it's not even about politics. It's, I think. It's a question of a culture, and definitely it's a question of a religion, which I believe is a part of the culture. And Czechs are completely not interested in religion. I think Poles are somehow more into it, and that's why they're just less liberal. I think this is enough to...
Yeah, we'll leave it with that. It's fine. Yeah. This is not a political podcast.
Not at all.
All right. So let's see, anything last bits about, okay, so you never got to give me your advice on what's a step I can do in the direction of getting a piece of my artwork in the Museum of Modern Art in New York.
Cold cherry salts. I have no idea.
No, I'm not asking for like the end result. You know, like mm-hmm. there's probably 100 steps I'm going to have to take to get that result.
Yeah.
What's the first step?
What's the first step? Yeah, I think that, okay.
I think Jerry Saltz is more like the 99th step.
The blessing, that would be the blessing that Jerry gives, the final blessing. The
final one, yes. He'll touch it and give it a little cross. And
Yeah, I think that if it's first step to get there, I would say, act locally, like build yourself a space that you can make art and you can support yourself somehow, like make money, maybe not out of your art, but just have enough of space and support to be able to do it in place you're currently at, you're currently living at, and among people that are from here and can support it this way or another. So I think that would be my advice. And then
very grassroots kind of, like, so basically make a good reputation for yourself, make a good community support network, collectors, gallerists, you know, even critics probably, and curators, and you get to build your reputation mm-hmm. locally first, focus there, and then it will naturally sort of tumble out into the rest of the world if you do all of that well.
It's pretty idealistic when you said that, but I think this is something that no one's going to, if you're not going to screw it up, no one's going to take it from you. Like, you will still be, doesn't really matter when you're in your 30s, in your 40s, in your 50s, when you have a reputation, there will be still some people having you in the back of their heads. That I don't believe in the superstar from zero to hero scenario, that someone would just come and pick you up and next MoMA show, you're my dark horse.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, in the process of starting this podcast, I started thinking about things like what you're talking about, which is, like, you know, build your community, your base, or your set of friends, your support network. And I realized that I've been doing the opposite of that for my entire life. Like, since I graduated high school, I think I moved 19 times to, like, you know, almost a dozen different locations. And so I've never actually been anywhere long enough in my adult career to truly sort of make all these connections and get this sort of support, group of people to interact with at any great volume or length. So that seems like something that maybe artists should try to think about. So instead of traveling the world and go for experiences, like, you can go do all that and get all your experiences and then find a place to stop and build your career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the only thing I can come up with now.
It's great. No, I like it, because I mean, it's something I've been thinking about recently as well. Mm-hmm. So I understand the idea of it, because, you know, like, I keep thinking about, like, oh, who can I contact to be part of this podcast? And I keep thinking back to all these people that I knew from previous places, and I'm like, oh, but they're so far away, you know, and everybody, I don't want to do this via Skype and all this kind of stuff. So, like, so unfortunately, I don't have a huge network of people here and around Prague because I just moved here. So I haven't built that network. And my network is mostly in the United States or in the Middle East and places that are not easy for me to get to. And I realized that that network is pretty important, mm-hmm. like that group of people, that support network, whatever you want to call it, is very necessary, really, for our careers. That, unfortunately, I made the mistake of not doing well.
Mm-hmm. But I guess that it's also, you know, I'm not living in the country where I was born, and I have a feeling like that the longer I'm Czech or living in Czech Republic, I can better profit from my previous experience in Poland when I was living there, and I can somehow monetize, not necessarily monetize, but like this effort
leverage.
That I might like
leverage.
That, yeah, I could leverage and be able to, yeah, just take some, yeah, be, you know, use it after all. So I guess that would be a moment when you can connect all those places and profit from these contacts.
Okay.
Was there another question? You said that there were two questions.
There were two questions. The second question was, what's any sort of advice to be able to be financially secure as an artist, let's call it successful, whatever word you want to put to it. But I believe that really your answers are going to be the same. Because I think you already said that.
Do not trust commercial galleries. I mean,
really?
No. I'm exaggerating. But do not trust in, not like put your trust in art market. I think that was like, that was my advice, wasn't it? No, it was not.
No, this is the first you've said of that.
No, I think
you don't trust the art market.
I think I've said that maybe there is an alternative way how to support your work. Not because apparently being represented by the gallery is not like the easiest thing you can think of. So
not only is it not easy, but it seems like it's not very common. Like, I mean, I've been speaking to artists in the region here since I moved here, and like exclusivity, some sort of guarantee or something like this is very not common here. It's very uncommon. I mean, I know of one gallery here in Prague that actually does the thing that I'd never heard of, which was they outright buy works from the artist and then turn around and resell it. So basically an artist who is represented by this gallery has a guarantee that the gallery will buy X value of art every month. So basically they know that their salary, that we'll call it, their artistic salary is set for the duration of this contract, but they won't earn more and they won't earn less. Like, so that's their quantity of income they'll get.
Mm-hmm.
It's consistent, but the gallery might end up selling more of their work because they bought it from them and they'll earn more money. So it's a very interesting dynamic.
Very suspicious, to it. I think. And I know it.
On the one hand, I love it personally. I like the idea of it, but I come from the artist side of the whole thing. Like, I like the idea of stability. I think that's a huge thing that all artists desire. Some sort of, it takes a great weight off your shoulder knowing that for, you know, the next year or 3 years or however long the contract is, that you know your bills are paid for. And you don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's great. Even if it's not a massive amount of money, but you know your bills are covered. Like, so you would negotiate whatever you need to negotiate to get what you need to make you feel comfortable. But like, it's an attractive idea. But I could definitely see the downfalls of it too.
Mm-hmm. I think I come across this model once, maybe 10 years ago in Warsaw. There was a company, a private company that established something called Abbey House, and they were paying their artists. They had like a stable of 15 artists, each one of them they were promoting, and they were paying them fixed amount of money every.
It's like the old idea of patronage, basically.
Mm-hmm. And it turned to be a fraud, and they lost. Like, unfortunately, most of these artists who were part of their gang, they were not able to reestablish themselves, and because it was somehow, there was a lot of antagonism between the newly established art scene that were 10 galleries that are really, they knew what they want to do, and then Abbey House, and also their choices weren't that good, so to say. They were not focused on sending artists abroad or being part of the art international art market, meaning going for art first. They were very local. I said, if you want to get successful, you got to be local, but not necessarily in terms of art market, and not necessarily in case of art market that is underdeveloped because we're living in post-communist country or Central Eastern European country. Nonetheless, I think that I didn't want to say that I hate art market, and I do value, like, I really enjoy some
of the... It's a necessary evil is what it is.
But I also admire certain people, especially from Prague art, from Prague gallery scene, that they're doing what they do for so long, that they have still, like, they resist, even though they probably it's not so easy to make a living, and it's an honest profession. But if I would be an artist, I think, like, if I would position myself in the role of an artist, I would definitely try to figure out the way how I gonna make my living differently. Work in the art school, work in whatever school you could.
Oh, the school, you know this as well as I do. The schools don't pay very well.
But they can. But you have some basic support. You could be, able to pay your rent from. Or this is, for instance, in Israel, it's super common to be.
It's very common throughout the art world in general. Mm-hmm. Many artists throughout the world are in order to give them some stable income, probably even health insurance as well, they become professors. Like, it's totally normal. It's actually probably more common for artists to be professors in order to have that a nice standard of living, basically, that then if and when they exhibit or sell their artworks, that's a more or less like a bonus almost. And of course then they can also apply for grants and different programs through the school, mm-hmm. to then give them more additional resources, yeah. and opportunities. I mean, I love teaching because of generally when I teach at a school, the school has some amazing resources that I get to then play with and I get to introduce to the students, but I also get to learn about it myself so that I could potentially then incorporate it in some of my own work. So mm-hmm. I love that. So if we have nothing else, then this has been marvelous. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you a lot. Thank you for having me.
Listening. If you have any questions for me or any questions or comments that you want me to discuss with future guests, please send me an email at matt@wisefoolpod.com, wisefoolpod.com. Ask them on our website, wisefoolpod.com, or any of our social media profiles on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Wise Fool Pod. I look forward to hearing from you in the near future and assisting you in gaining more understanding of the contemporary visual art market.